Tim Graves, Dobro Player of the Year so many times in the Stigma Association that they ought to just name it after him. But he's a member of a great band, the Farmhands Bluegrass Quartet, and they have a great album. Came out this year. A new one will be coming out soon. I think next year, maybe. It's probably out. You can probably buy it at the stand if you see them somewhere, but it'll be coming out next year. But the new album, In a Country Town, again, all kinds of awards. This is a great band. And Tim literally, I think, has won 8, 9 Dobro Player of the Year awards. I think at some point they're going to have to cut him out of it, like Michael Jordan can't compete anymore. It's just too much, Tim. You're going to have to let it go. Tim Graves, thanks so much for stopping by.
Hello, this is Tim Graves. You're listening to Unreal Bluegrass with Steve Martin.
I want to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass today, Tim Graves. I'm very proud to have you on the show, Tim.
Hey, Steve. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Listen, I'm happy to connect up, and I can tell the audience, or you can, how we actually... I've been meaning to get with you, by the way, for a while. I really have. I've got some of your stuff in my library that I program from, but this was a more direct connection about a week or so ago. You and I were both engaged separately in a texting contest with Sonny Osborne, which
we sure was. it was funny. He was talking to me and he sent me a number, and I thought, why did you send me this number?
Yeah.
And he said, you need to call this guy.
That's right. And so he texted me back, Tim's going to call you, and then sure enough, there you were.
Yeah.
So you know how it is. When Sonny says do something, you and I both do it. So
we do it right there. That's
yeah,
right.
out of respect, and not you know, just because you know it's a good
right.
thing if he says to do it. He's always got your best interest. And
right.
you know how I feel about the guy. We're going to talk about your time with the Osborne brothers, and I know how you feel about him. But I've been listening to Tim has been in bluegrass for a long time, award-winning. You've won so many Dobro Bluegrass Music Award Dobro players. You know, Michael Jordan eventually quit competing for the slam dunk contest because he thought it was unfair.
I've got 9
yeah.
Dobro Player of the Years. I think one more is all I can get, and I think then they retire me.
Oh, then they kick you out? All right. I remember you.
Well, they're going to take me off the ballot.
Take you off the ballot. Okay. Well, you're that's good. That's good. And you, of course, are. You have a kind of a Dobro tradition in your family. I want to make sure the listeners understand the connection.
I do. I'm the nephew of Uncle Josh, who played with Flat Scruggs,
who
was credited with bringing the Dobro into bluegrass music.
He really was. He changed it all. It's funny that he was with that great band, and here you had the 5-string banjo of Earl, which just
man.
Revolutionized everything on banjo playing, and then probably kicked in the whole... what we think of today as modern, as bluegrass. You know, that probably was the driving force.
It did, you know.
And then
it really did. Because when they went with, when Lester Earl went with Bill in 1946, the banjo before that had been a string thing.
Yeah.
And so it just changed the whole face of bluegrass when Earl started with 3-finger roll.
And then there was Josh, like note for note. I listened to these albums, and I would think, you know, it's like, I don't know if they did this on the back of the bus or if Josh just copied him note for note, but I'm thinking here he is on Dobro.
Well, I think that's just what happened. I mean, standing beside Earl all those years, it just sort of rubbed off on him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was amazing. I mean, it was just amazing how good they worked.
Oh, that was a magic band. I mean, clearly that was a magical
really
band.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Did you were you exposed to the Dobro through your uncle, or just it was a coincidence that you picked it up?
It's just funny that back whenever we lived in Detroit back in I guess from 1961 to 1969, we lived in Detroit, and Dad would always play the Marco Flashill, and he would say, "That's your uncle."
Yeah.
I was so young, I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
So, but it excited me. Every time I heard him play it, it would excite me. So we moved to Tennessee in 1969 when he started coming up and seeing us, and I realized that what Dad was saying was he was my uncle, and the Dobro was what was exciting me so much. So it was just odd that it was, you know, I was attracted to that instrument and not knowing that Uncle Josh was my uncle.
Now, did you know him?
No, I didn't know until 1969.
Oh,
I was nine years old at the time.
Oh, that'll be darn.
So, but I knew I loved that instrument, but I didn't know that he was my uncle.
And now
it's
just
weird.
And now you got a model named after you.
I do, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know, but he would come up and he brought me a guitar back in 1975. He brought me a Dobro with a stack of records. And he said, "Here you go, kid." He said, "If you can hear it, you can play it." So I started on June 25th, 1975. And I started playing dobro.
No kidding. What did he bring you? Do you remember what he brought dropped off?
He brought all of the flat scrug stuff that he had. And then he brought some of the stuff that he had cut in 1975, which was, I know he brought the Metro album later on and Along That Path later on, a little bit later on, but it was, he brought the Puritan album that he cut with Kenny Baker.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first album that I learned some licks off of on dobro.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very, very interesting, you know.
It is, yeah. That's cool. That's so right now, we're going to catch up. We're going to talk about, I want to get into the Farmhands Bluegrass Quartet, the album, In a Country Town, which just won every award, just as you keep winning the Bluegrass Music Dobro Player. This album just cleaned up, man. You guys just, you must have walked away with a wheelbarrow full of awards.
It done good for us, and it's been a real good album for us, really has.
It's a great album, and I have the members as Daryl Mosley, which you've recorded some things. You and Daryl have put some stuff on recordings also.
Right, yeah, we cut an album cover. Remember the Beacon Brothers? Give it tribute to Brother Axe, what it was.
Oh, okay.
And we cut that back when me and him was both with Bob Sonny.
Okay, yeah, well, and he is bass, writes some songs. You're on dobro. Kevin Williamson doesn't everybody kind of take a part in singing? I wanted to ask you about how these harmonies come together, but Kevin Williamson, guitar, yeah. and then Benny Bowling, I'll say his last name is Bowling, is that correct?
Yeah, it's Bowling, yeah, B-O-L-I-N.
Okay, and he's the banjo guy. Let me ask you then, because I want to talk to you about some of the harmonies that you have. Is there a model in your mind? And we know you were exposed to the Osborne Brothers for so long. Is there a model that comes through in the harmonies that the Farmhands Bluegrass Quartet would use in this album, In a Country Town?
Well, yeah, they're stacked standard most times. But me and Daryl both worked with the Osborne Brothers for about 10 years. And that influence, you know, we was always, you know, thinking, what can we do? And Daryl was such a good part singer, and so was Kevin. That they just, you know, they would bend the stuff around to where it hit better than what it normally would, you know.
Well, you know,
it just come off good, and that was the influence of working right beside Bob and Sonny for all those years.
Well, you have to. I mean, there's no way you could spend that much time with those guys who don't, you know. Of course, Bobby's voice was off the charts, but Sonny was so solid in his part. And then the combine the harmonies the way they used to stack them up, you can't possibly be around that long and not absorb at least the interest in trying to make something that quality reach that level again.
That's right. I mean, and Sonny, you know, he said, whenever you do something, do it the best you can, you know. And so that's what we try to do, you know. And just and you know, Daryl, he was a real good part singer, but he got better and better the longer he stood beside Bob Sonny. And so it just, he told me, you know, he said, I thought I could sing parts until I got to working with them boys. He said, I learned a whole lot. You have to. I mean, that's just the way it is.
You have to. You know, what's interesting, what's always been interesting to me about that combination of Bobby and Sonny is that, you know, Bobby was such an outrageously good singer at almost any key and in any volume that you forget what a great mandolin player he was.
Sonny said there was, you know, he said him and Jesse was such stylistic picker, Jesse McReynolds.
Yeah.
You know, but he said exactly like you did. He said Bobby was at, he said there was a time when there was nobody could touch that man and when it went to the singing. And it just overshadowed his mandolin playing because he was such a good vocalist, you know.
Yeah, and then Sonny, of course, was, you know, one of the absolute best, and maybe I still think the most innovative one. You know, he took Scruggs and then kind of opened the door to all that other stuff he would do in those slow backups and those, you know, he was such a phenomenal banjo player. You forget what a great singer he was. It's funny how it kind of works both ways.
I agree 100%. You know, whenever he had the rotator cuff surgery on his shoulder, he quit playing banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just stand there and sing with Daryl and Bobby. And his vocals were so good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, this guy is such a good singer, you know. So they were both powerhouses. They just really were. There's just no two ways about it.
I don't say this because of my friendship with Sonny, and I'm not saying this because you're on the phone, but I really think when it all shakes out, because of the longevity they were together all the time and all the music they did and all the different bells they rang and the quality they put in, I really think when it's all said and done, they might be the most influential. And by that I mean, you know, bands today are still, you hear a new band come along. Let's say it could be the Farm. I've seen a lot of your YouTube stuff, and of course you pull out some Osmond Brothers stuff. But a new band will come along, and they'll have a lot of new stuff, and then there's an Osmond Brothers tune or two that pops in there almost every time.
Right. Well, you know, it was funny. Whenever, you know, I went to work with Bob Sonny. Sonny called me and said, you know, would you like to come play Dobro? I said, sure. And I had grew up on their music. So to me, they were my Flash Crows.
Oh, okay.
Because I grew up on their music, and I went to the Grand Ole Opry, and we started going over songs, and I knew everything that they had done. I knew every song they played. And it was, I didn't know the, you know, exact how he wanted me to do the breaks or anything, but I knew the songs, and I realized then that I knew everything that they had done because I grew up, you know, and it was just a real good time playing music for them.
And you were with them for how long?
We was with Bob and Sonny 10 years. Sonny quit, I think, about 8 years into our tenure with him, and we finished out with Bobby, so we was with Bob and Sonny about 10 years.
Wow. Oh, there's.
So it was a good ride. It really was.
You know what we could do? We could do a Sonny used to come on every Saturday, and there's probably 23 interviews with Sonny on my website where he would just every Saturday it was Saturdays with Sonny, and we would just go through stories about being on the road. And I bet you we could probably do with your tenure, we could probably do a similar thing and just tell stories of on the road and things that happened in shows.
Oh yeah, I've got a bunch of some funny ones and really funny stuff out there with Bob and Sonny.
it was a different I don't know, man. Those guys were just a different character. That's all.
But, you know, they really were, and I just respect both of them so much. And you know, Sonny, I'll call him, you know, just and we would be. I tell you what, we would be up there on the bus running up down the road, and I would ask him questions how they become so successful. You know, I said, I know it's talent. I said, I know you got to have that, but there's got to be another element to be successful. And he would tell me. He wasn't afraid to share with me, you know,
yeah.
The things that me and Daryl would need to be doing. And me and Daryl worked on this, you know, the farmhouse for many years while we were with Bob and Sonny. Sonny knew about it. You know, he said, I know you guys are going to start your own thing, but we would just wait until, you know, they sort of run their course, and we took out on our own. And we still, you know, ask him things that we should be doing. And he tells us.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just great to have a friend like that. You know?
And you know the thing about him, and as you're talking about, you probably go back with questions about the Farmhands Bluegrass Quartet. If you ask him a question, he's going to answer it. And then he'll probably, if he feels like you're not doing something as good as you could, he will tell you because he knows that you want to know. That's the answer.
That's it. You know, the first time we saw him was at Stigma, as we put the band together. He said, my first question to you is, what are you traveling in? Because he hates a bus. Sonny Osmond hates a bus.
Yeah.
And I said, I sold my bus and we're traveling in a van. He said, very smart move. he said, you don't need to be driving a bus right now. I said, I know. And so we sold the bus, started, and we went back to driving a van. You know,
so. Wow.
That way we get to bring money home, you know.
That's, you know what? That's the key. That's the key. At some point, you got to be able to bring the money home. So, that's great. We'll talk again sometime, Tim, and we'll just kind of go through some of those stories. I'll tell you what we can do also, and I've done this in the past. I've done it with Ronnie Reno and Bill Emerson and Larry Stevenson and Bill Evans out in California, where we'll set up a time when I'll patch Sonny in. We'll get with you and I'll patch Sonny in. We'll just go back. We'll do that maybe. Gosh, it might be getting too crowded toward the end of the year, but we'll do that. I guarantee you we'll do a time when we'll get the two of you on at the same time, patch you both in, and we'll just go back and forth.
That'd be great. I'd love it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk about then In a Country Town, which is there's a really nice video of that that floats around if anybody wants to see. It's a good nice even tempo tune for me on this new album In a Country Town. The title cut just a nice it's a nice slow, tells a story about growing up and being in a small town. And who I need to ask you this too, because although I have the airplay stuff, I don't have all the credits. I know who wrote some of these things, but who wrote that song?
Okay. Daryl wrote that. Daryl Moulton wrote it.
Okay. And it,
he had in mind a theme for the album. And so he goes and he cuts that, he writes that song for it. And it just, you know, it's had thousands of hits on the video. and we play it on every show we go to because it's such a good, positive, upbeat song, you know.
Oh, it's a great, you know, it's a great song about it. My favorite line, I think, is the faith in this. We put our faith in the Savior and the sugar in our tea. I bet you South. I bet you in the South. I bet you in the South, you know, that comes across real well.
Yeah, we get a chuckle every time we do that one. Yeah, but it, you know, he wrote it, and it's just a wonderful song, and it's just something we get a lot of requests for, and it sold a lot of albums for us. That song has.
Oh, that's good. Mind you, you did a good job then picking it as the title cut, because that always helps people identify it.
Yep. It just turned out to be a good song. You know, he wrote it long before. I mean, we had a theme for the album as we started thinking about it. And so he wrote that song, and then we just, you know, put everything else behind it, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, Tim. Was the theme based around this country town concept, or just the feeling that you got from it? Or, because, I mean, I want to talk to you about Joe the Baptist here in a minute, and whether that was a real person or...
We do a lot of gospel songs, and we prepare a lot of churches. So the theme of the album had to be, you know, positive stuff. Nothing, you know, I mean, just positive songs is what it's all about, you know, and gospel songs are positive songs.
Yeah.
And that's how the thing came about, you know.
Well, and it is, and everything about it is positive. And the second cut is Blue Skies, where you get into that. Made me start thinking about some of those harmonies, because there's a middle part in the end where the music drops off, and you're just doing that strong harmony sound. And I kept thinking, I bet there's a influence, whether intended or not.
Kevin Kevin wrote that one.
Okay.
That was one that he wrote and brought to us, and so it, you know, it was a good song that he had wrote coming back out of Florida. He was coming up the interstate, and it was a cloudy day, and the clouds opened up, and the sun started shining. So he wrote, "I can see the blue sky." You know, the blue sky made the song. So he wrote that as he was coming home out of Florida.
You know, I count, and not counting the Kris Kristofferson "Why Me, Lord" tune. I count of the 10 cuts that I have on this album. I count. I'll say easily 7 that are gospel.
Yeah, they are, and it's, you know, like I said, we do a lot of churches, and so we sort of lean to that, and you can put stuff on there that, as long as it's positive, you know, the church people, you know, they'll accept it like that.
Well,
we do in a country town in church.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I can imagine. I mean, everything on it, even the closing cut on the thing is better than today. Is just again, it's just an uplifting type of a tune.
Right. So, you know, it turned out to be a good album. It won Album of the Year, and it was nominated for Song of the Year and stuff like that. So it worked out well.
Yeah.
Of
the tunes that are original here, the one that I know that instantly is not is Why Me, Lord, which is one of those tunes that the many, many memorable tunes that Kris Kristofferson wrote. But what goes into choosing a tune that's outside of what you're bringing to it as original material?
Well, it just, Why Me, Lord, I had done that song so many times on stage, and it just fit the theme of what we were doing, and we had a lot of requests to record it, you know, so that was just one that we put on there just because people said, "Man, are you going to record Why Me, Lord?" Or they'd come to our table and they'd say, which album is Why Me, Lord? Well, we've not recorded it yet.
Okay.
You know, they kept on asking for it.
And it's a very humble, if people aren't familiar with the lyrics, which could happen, I mean, if someone hasn't heard it from Kris or maybe from you live, they're going to hear it on this album. The tune is a very, the lyrics in the song is a very much of a humbling, you know, I almost look at the person when Kris wrote this, I have no idea, but it's almost like his head is bowed. It's like, you know, I'm not worthy, and why are you doing these things for me, Lord? And that's the kind of the way the tune goes.
Well, you know, the story on that, the way he wrote that song, he had went to the Cowboy Church. He was in Nashville one night. Went to the Cowboy Church, and as he was there, the Lord took him up to the altar. He went up and gave his life back to the Lord. And then, as he was going home, he wrote this song, and it was about his struggle as, you know, coming back. Is what it was.
Oh, okay, so, good.
He wrote the song. He wrote the song as he was leaving church, and it was number one for him. You know.
Oh yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those redeeming type. Okay, I didn't know that story. Thanks for that. That makes perfect sense. Joe the Baptist, was there a guy named Joe the Baptist, or was it just like a bunch of characters put together?
Well, it was Benny had wrote that, our banjo player wrote that song, and that was a it was a guy that he knew. His name was Joe, and he was a farmer,
huh.
And so he wrote it around. He wrote it around what he did. You know, he would preach to people as he was farming, riding on his old John Deere tractor. So it was just somebody that Benny knew, and he wrote a song about it.
You
it's very popular. We do that song on every show.
Oh, it's a wonderful song. It's an upbeat tempo, and that of all the songs, I know that's one of the ones that I made a note of. It's kind of a fast moving tune, and it's a great little story about this farmer on his tractor, and like you say, that he took every opportunity he could to witness this part of his life, and then he died in his tractor.
Yeah, and he died on it, and so it was just a wonderful song. We get a lot of requests for that one too.
Yeah. The I don't need to go through every one of these, but as I'm looking at the list, I don't mean to surprise you and say let's tell me the details of all of them. But I like the fact that you have in a country town, and then I was raised in a railroad town. You got two songs that are, you know, kind of different things. But I tell you the thing about the railroad. Who wrote the I was raised in a railroad town?
Kevin wrote that one.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was a song about the hometown that he was from up in Kentucky.
Yeah.
In
okay.
West Virginia. It was the railroad. The railroad had like three of them coming to this one town, and he wrote a song called Railroad Town.
You know, the thing that makes, when I listen to that tune all the way through, I think I hope that there is a there's a generation beyond ours where they can remember when the railroad played such a big part, and not just in the work life, but which in this one the song is actually about, you know, there's a change and the railroad changes and it affects the workers, but the railroad as a way of getting around and relocating. I just have this feeling that it's taking a smaller role.
Sure. Yeah. You know, and it was such a good song, you know, and the way the harmonies come down on everything, I thought, you know, it'd be a wonderful song to record. We was not going to record it, but we kept on singing it out, and it just came off so well, we thought we'd better record it.
Did you, let me ask you this, because I've talked to Sonny about how they would pick songs for an album, and then back in those days, you would do an album, and then you would, you knew when you showed up to do a show, you would be doing that album, plus other things, especially from the Osmond Brothers. It's so much to pull from. But it sounds like a couple of these tunes, Why Me Lord and I Was Raised in a Railroad Town, you get feedback from live shows and start thinking maybe we ought to put this on a record.
That's exactly it. You know, and we got that from Sonny about, you know, if you cut an album, you have got to be able to do it on stage, because you won't sell that record if you don't do that.
Right.
You know, so... Out of In a Country Town, we can do, I think we had 10 songs on there. We do 8 of the 10 on shows. You know, and the new one that we got coming out right now, that'll be out in January, we do, there's 12 on it, and we do 10 of the 12 on stage.
Already?
Yeah, and so you gotta do that. I mean, you can't cut an album and not do the songs. You know?
Yeah.
And I was real bad at that before. I would cut an album and not be able to do any of the songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it didn't make sense, and I don't know why I wouldn't think of that. You know, but it's if you're going to cut an album and cut some songs, you better be able to do them on stage.
You know, it's a simple concept, but
it is. You know,
and of course that's one of the things I think the beauty of Sonny's approach. You know, I always looked at Sonny, and you know this much better than me. I always looked at him as sort of the business mind of that operation.
He was, and you know that's nothing, you know. Nothing but Bobby.
No.
But Sonny was the muscle behind that. You know, he just really was.
Mm-hmm.
He knew how to make the decision right, and Sonny, you know, he demanded respect from people. You know, and that's what you have to do. You have to know where you are. You know,
right.
and I respected him so much for that. He would on his shows, he had it in his contract where he would not open and he would not play after a certain time. And I asked him, I said, why do you do that? He said, well, he said, it all comes down to merch sales. You know, he said, you can't sell nothing at the end of the evening. You know, he said, everybody's gone, retired. He said, they have to want to come to your table, you know, so.
And that,
and I hadn't thought about stuff like
never,
that.
Never occurred to me. That thought never occurred to me. But Sonny is the guy who would do, you know, for, well, that's amazing that he would even think
yeah.
about that, you know.
Yeah, and I asked him, you know, and he put it in his contract. You know, he wouldn't open the show and he would not close the show, but then he had to play between a certain time, you know, and he did it just commercial.
I'll be darned.
I was amazed.
Well, you know, it worked for him.
Yeah, and so now I put in my contract, same thing.
Do you really?
You know, I sure do. And you know, the promoters, they understand it, you know, and so it just it works out well.
I've never, you know, of all the times I've just sat around with him, and sometimes we just talk about nothing, sometimes we talk about music or what have you. I'm going to have to find out more about that. That's amazing that he even thought of that detail.
It really is. I loved it. I thought, you know, that's very, very smart to think of that stuff, you know. And he said, well, you know, he said, if you're closing the show, he said, they're tired. He said, they've been there all day. He said, they're not going to come to your record table.
Man, oh, man.
Thought, you know what? He's correct.
Plus, they might have spent all their money by the time the last act comes around.
That's true. That's it.
Isn't that something? Hey, let me ask you about there was a waltz on here, River of Sin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice. And that, but I want to talk to you about He Saw It All, because that to me is of the gospel feel of this album. That might be the most overpowering of all of the gospel tunes.
You know, that song. Daryl wrote that song, and he wrote that song coming back from Cherokee, North Carolina, with Bob Sing.
Did he really?
And that song got to Bill Gaither some way or another, and it ended up in the hands of the Booth Brothers, and it's their signature song. It was their number one song. It made it was their first number one. It made song of the year, and it made their list of the top 35 Southern gospel songs of all time. And so Daryl wrote that in about 30 minutes. And so right now, it's one of the biggest Southern gospel songs there is.
It's a powerful song.
Yeah, great song. We do it every night. And I told Daryl, I said, you know, yeah, it's the Booth Brothers' signature song, but you wrote it, so we can do it.
Heck yeah.
And be legit doing it, you know. So it's our song just as much as it is there because Daryl wrote it.
Sure, absolutely. You guys do a great job. You do a great job on it, too.
We play it at every church and every bluegrass festival. We play that song. That's our Rocky Top right now, you know.
Is it really?
Yeah, it works out well, and everybody wants to buy the record that it's on. So, you know, we said, well, listen, it's on this album right here.
Listen,
I might put it on every album.
Listen to you, Tim. Listen how you talk now. That's our Rocky Top. You can't even get away from the Osborne Brothers in just normal conversation.
I don't really want to.
Yeah, I know, but it's just funny. Isn't it funny how much soaks in that you don't even realize, and we all think that way.
It does.
Oh, that's great. No, it's a great, you guys just absolutely do a great job on He Saw It All. As far as I'm concerned, it's your signature tune from this point forward.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You nail it. It's fun. This is a great album, man. No wonder you won so many. I'm so glad to get to talk to you about it.
It come off well. It come off better than any of us expected, actually, you know. And the one that we got coming out is vocally better than that one, because we had 200 shows under us after that CD.
Well,
it come off the vocals is even better on the new one than it is on that one.
And is that, and so you, that's already recorded. It's not going to be released till January.
Right, it's we're selling it off our table already.
Oh, okay.
The record label's not releasing it till January.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I'll have to catch up to you.
It'll go to all the stations and all the downloads and stuff that build out in January.
Okay, so on that, how many tunes do you have on that one then?
It's there's 12 songs on it.
Okay, do you original stuff? Do you go back and pull some old songs back in?
Daryl wrote some, and Benny wrote some, and Keith too is our new guitar player. He's been with us since May. He was the one that wrote stuff for the Lonesome River Band.
Sure.
So he wrote a song that's on there. So it's just a real, real good album.
Cool. How are you? So right now you guys kind of course it's November heading into December. Are you kind of? I know you tour a lot. I know you're on the road. The one thing I understand about the Farmhands, the Bluegrass Quartet, is you're out there performing, which is another thing you learned from Sonny and Bobby. I bet that you got to keep out there.
He said there's two things. He said. About being a musician, he said, you got to be able to sell records. He said, if you can't sell records, he said, you don't need to be in this business. And he said, next thing, he said, you got to work. He said, you know, he said, you can't be a band if you're not out there working all the time. And that's the truth. You know, it just really is. So we work about 200 days a year is what we're doing right now.
That's a bunch. That's a bunch.
Yep.
What does, you know, here, let me ask you this, and I want to get back to the new album coming out, and I want to talk about a website that's available for people to get to and talk about the end of your year appearances. I know there's you have some church appearances coming up toward the end, but did you ever talk to Sonny about a band versus what a lot of band names are now, which is kind of like a person who will show up and get some local, not just local, but in other words, it's not the same group that goes in all the time and performs, and then you kind of lose that cohesiveness, I think. Did you ever talk to Sonny about what a band is?
Well, yeah, he said, here's the thing. He said, you've got to get everybody in that group going the same direction.
Okay.
And wanting the same end deal, And he said, people get used, he said, they see one band, and that's the band they want to see all the time. He said, like Fat and Scrub.
Yep.
They never switch members. Bob and Sonny went forever without switching members. You know, I mean, their members stayed a long time. And that's what the people, when they saw a sign, when they saw a flyer said the Osmond Brothers, they knew who was going to be there, and they knew that the show was going to be good.
Yep.
And that's what we have to do. I mean, we've had one band change. Since we started our band, Kevin, he decided that he was with us 2 years, and he decided to start his family band. So we've had one band change in 3 years, which that's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
And hopefully they'll this core we got right now will stay with us for a long, long time.
Yeah, I hope so. So I mean, I can't wait for the new one. Let me talk a little bit about the new one coming out again. We've touched on it a little bit. It'll be out January 15th, and it's on Pine Castle. Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And if someone comes,
like I said, they've got us. We're selling off our table right now, but it don't hit the media part till January the 15th.
So if someone comes out to see the farmhands now, they could pick that up live.
Right. They can. Yeah.
Okay. Did I miss the name of this? What's the name of the new one coming out?
The new one is Better Than I Deserve.
Okay. Is the content of that similar to what we're describing here and in a country town as far as the mix of gospel?
It's real similar to that same format. It's songs that you can sing in a church. Okay. And it don't have to be a gospel song, but it's an uplifting song that's positive. And that's the kind of stuff we try to cut.
Well, I mean, you did the in a country town, everything is just uplifting. The tunes that aren't, just obviously a gospel, they're all that uplifting, positive thing. So I think that's a good thing for you to go
and
with.
And it seems to, I told Darryl, we play a lot of church, and we can't take stuff in there that's not uplifting or gospel.
Oh, no.
We just can't do it.
No. If you have a few, I was looking at your website the other day, which is, I guess if people just Google Farmhands Bluegrass Quartet, they're going to find you, right?
Right, yeah, they just bring up a Farmhands Quartet and it'll go straight to our site.
Okay, and then you have, I saw where you had, I don't know, how many dates do you think you have by the year end of 2014 up there?
We probably got another
six
20
or eight?
So dates, I guess.
20, okay, all right.
The end of the year.
All right, I missed some. Okay, so are they mostly at this point of the year, this time of the year, are they in Tennessee, Kentucky, that part of the I don't mean Kentucky, just that, that part of the region of the United States. You're not going to California anytime soon, I guess.
No. Our agent seems to keep us in the same, on the eastern coast. He don't take us out too much.
Okay. And they can go to that website. They can't get the new one, but they could certainly find in a country town there.
Well, they can buy the new one off the site. It's on the site. Go to the store.
Okay.
And they can buy it off there. It's just not going out to media people.
Gotcha. Okay, I gotcha. All right. You said that every time the same way, and I didn't catch what you were saying. Okay, so I get it now. Okay, great. All right. Well, listen, that's great. We will, Tim Graves, I'm so happy that Sonny said you guys need to talk, because I've wanted to do this for a while, I'm happy that you were available to do it, and I really like this now.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get the new one.
I might be able to get you one before then. Maybe I'll send it to you if I can.
If you want, I won't tell.
You'll have it a little bit early.
I won't tell anybody how I got it. My lips are sealed. And as Sonny, I'm an attorney during the day, and as Sonny didn't tell you that. And when we're sitting talking, when there's something, and I obey this every time, he says, "Now you're my attorney on this," and that means it doesn't go anywhere.
That's right.
This is all privilege, right? I said, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, we'll do that. Everything you tell me is going to be privileged. And he knows I won't break that. So if you send it to me
right.
and it's privileged, I will never breach where it came from.
Right. I'll get you one out. Just text me your address. I'll send you one
out. I'll do it when we're done here, man. Thanks. All right, listen, Tim Gray, this has been great, man. And we're gonna hook up. I'll talk to Sonny about this, and we'll catch a time when we can get him on, and UK is not playing, and he's able to get on the phone and actually talk,
right.
and I'll get you on with Sonny, and we'll do a three-way thing on a live on a Saturday afternoon. I need to get Sonny back on here anyway.
It'd be fun.
Oh, it's a blast. You, if you go on Unreal Bluegrass, which is my website, unrealbluegrass.com, where after this airs, I will put your interview on there so for people can go back and listen to it. If you go listen to the one I did with Ronnie Reno, and I patched Sonny in, for the next 40 minutes, I think they were just laughing. I don't remember any words coming out. It was just, you know, one word from Ronnie would be another story, and Sonny would say a word, and they laughed and laughed and laughed, and I just sat back and just smiled. It was just a fun.
Well, that's great.
Oh, it's a blast. It was a blast.
I tell you what, I loved working with them guys. I mean, it was, I was with Wimley Cooper for 12 years. That's where I got acquainted with Bob and Sonny.
Yeah.
With at the Grand Ole Opry with her. And then I got acquainted with them, and had Sonny produced my first album for Pinecast.
Man.
And he told me, I remember him saying, he said, you know what? He said, this album is not going to do a whole lot. He said, but it's still good music. And I didn't understand what he meant by that because I was young, but I understood it, after I got into it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
he always shot straight with me, and I appreciate that.
He always will, as you know him much better than me. But I will just tell you that I could not confirm that more. All right, well, listen, Tim, I'm going to let you, run. I know you got stuff to do, and I've enjoyed it immensely, Tim Graves. Thanks so much, man. I feel graced by the fact that you were willing to come on and talk about this album, and we're going to hook up. We'll do it again sometime. So, Tim Graves, thanks for...
I appreciate you. Call me anytime you want.
Hey, man, we'll do it. Thanks for coming on Unreal Bluegrass, and best of luck to you. I'll catch you down the road somewhere, too. I'll find you. If you're in my neck of the woods, I'll wind up finding you somewhere live.
I appreciate you. Come see us if you can.
I'll do her, Tim. All right, bud, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.